You're on the panel, RNZ National. I'm Wallace Chapman. Now, opening off Friday Mailbag, and two themes really jumped out this week. Just a couple of topics here. Now, one on the Reserve Bank wanting to ensure access to cash, even though it is declining. We had a discussion on that with the Assistant Reserve Bank Governor. Isla in Central Otago says, "Kia ora, Wallace. I live in a rural area. During lockdown and being over 70, if I hadn't had cash, asking my amazing neighbours to get supplies I needed would have been more challenging." Another one here, "I never carry cash, but recently had $450 to bank. The bank had queues, COVID precautions. I was meeting someone at the Wellington Botanic Gardens, so I thought I'd do it after. I lost the envelope of cash. It came out of my pocket on my dog walk, on my walk with my dog."
Oh, no. That's,
and that was just recently.
Terrifying.
So if you do see $450 in the Wellington Botanic Gardens.
Happy birthday.
No.
No, sorry, sorry. Give it back, give it back, give it back, give it back.
We know whose it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a bad dog walking the dog in the morning, isn't it?
Shocking.
Tim in Dunedin says, "I asked friends of mine what their biggest issue was in terms of getting through the Christchurch quake after the initial shock. They said they did not have enough cash set aside. And they had a few thousand dollars to hand at the time." Tom says, "Panel, the elimination of cash and the potential digitization of money carries some very serious political, social, philosophical and, of course, economic consequences. This demands long and vigorous public debate." Do either of you carry cash around, Leonie?
No, not really. I think I have a little bit of cash in the car for put in the parking meter, and that's about it. I don't carry cash, but I am conscious. Like for my parents that don't really use online banking and things like that, it's they've just can't use checks anymore. So there's still some, I think, that perhaps the elderly that would still use cash.
So you still want to see cash in society?
Well, I think there's just a period of time, isn't it? I'm sure we're going to get to no cash at all. But, I'm just conscious for some of the old, elderly.
Of course. What about you, Adam? Do you have cash on you?
I do actually, but I was gigging and I got. Do you know what I got? I got $100 US tip from an American. I like Americans now. At a gig the other day.
You did one of those.
Yeah, well, I never empty. I do have cash because
I hope he's paying tax on that.
Of course I am.
You've got a 50.
I got receipts. It'll turn up in a second. Oh, yeah. I think someone. But yeah, digital banking, like digital, you're always worried that it's going to disappear quick.
Alan, how can we carry so much cash on you?
Because I forgot I had it.
You better not tell them because he might get mad.
No, but you know what else I did? Because I moved house so many times and then I finally got my place and everything was in storage. And I don't know why, but I found money in a darts box and I opened it up. I was looking for my old wedding ring to sell it, to be honest, and then there was money that I stored away, and I don't know why I did it. I don't remember doing it, but I love old me. He's great fun.
All right. We'll try and fit in our feedback on burials later because they're very interesting, and the issue of vertical burials came up, whether or not they exist. And Dawn Waioku says English writer Ben Jonson is buried standing up in Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey, as the smaller plots were cheaper. It is 22 to 5, the panel, RNZ National. Also this week, we had a story about a shiny roof, the glare being, put your money away, Alan, the glare being so much that the neighbour had to wear her sunglasses inside. And it led us not just to talk about shiny roofs, but also think about bright white roofs, because there's a bit of a movement, in fact it's called the White Roof Movement, helping to reflect the sun's heat away from the dark, asphalt-dominated urban environment, which can really become heat zones in summer. Now, Dr. Adam Taylor is from the Faculty of Design and Creative Technologies School of Engineering, Computer and Mathematical Sciences at AUT, who a while back now researched the issue of white roofs. Dr. Taylor, kia ora, welcome.
Yeah, kia ora, Wallace, thanks for having me.
Pleasure, yeah. Look, so the issue of white roofs has become, once I looked into it, pretty topical in recent years, even a white roof movement. Is it a worthwhile idea actually looking at this as a concept, do you think?
The short answer is yes. So what happened was a few years ago we had, this was becoming, it was coming to the fore, and there were some discussions going on. I went to a seminar run by Engineers for Social Responsibility, and it was discussed there. And coincidentally, out of that, I got the opportunity to do an experiment. And that experiment was, we've got two identical buildings, one of them with a old red roof and one of them with a roof that was going to be painted white. And these buildings were co-located, they were similarly used, and so I set up some monitoring equipment to see what the effects were, not in terms of just in terms of the temperature of the roof, but in terms of the effects on the occupants. And the outcome from that was fairly along the lines of what I expected, but it was the first bit of science that I was aware of that actually provided some empirical data to support this.
It's extraordinary. So can you explain a bit more of the outcome?
Essentially, the white roof versus a dark-coloured roof, yeah, it works as a thermal sink. So a dark color, anything will absorb energy, and in this case, sunlight energy. And the how hot it'll get really depends upon how much energy it absorbs and how quickly it can get rid of that energy.
Right.
And so what we see with the white roofs is it basically reduces the amount of energy that the roof absorbs, and this has a significant impact on the surrounding temperature, not just of the building and the building occupants, but also the surrounding environment, is what some other research is showing.
I find this actually very interesting and quite extraordinary, you know, and I know that you're very involved in property, Leonie, so you might have a sort of comment here, but urban areas, cities of dark asphalt, known as urban heat islands, we all know if we stay around in the cities in summer, can be a very, very hot environment. If, say, we had a white roof suburb or a precinct or an area, might it go some way into just taking the edge off that heat, I wonder?
Yes. There's been some, there was a good work that was done over in Spain where they had a whole lot of greenhouses. And what they found was during the summer, the greenhouses were just getting too hot. And so what they did was they painted them white. And this covered about 270 square kilometres. And the effect of painting these greenhouses white was it actually dropped the surrounding temperature of the area by about 2 degrees.
No.
Yes.
2 degrees.
It was quite significant. And you mentioned just before about the cities getting hot. The cities are an urban heat sink. They just absorb energy. The concrete absorbs it, the roads absorb it and all of that. And more so, it actually radiates that heat back out in the evening. So when it gets cooler, it doesn't get cooler, if that
right.
makes sense. What would normally, in the evenings where normally it would start to get cold, the roads are still hot. I mean, that's why the cat goes and lies on the driveway, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Because, and it gets, there was some, and cities are typically several degrees warmer than the surrounding areas. And there was one data set that I come across that showed one city in particular was 12 degrees warmer on some evenings, because of this absorbed heat through the day, as well as the occupation and the activity within the city itself, of course.
Well, let's bring our panel. Leonie, you might have a sort of a thoughtful comment on this, being involved in property yourself.
Oh, I think it's fascinating research, yeah. and good on you, Adam, for undertaking this, because there's a huge amount of work going on around all sorts of buildings and energy efficiency and impact with climate and,
right.
and how we occupy our buildings and our urban environments in a smarter way. So there's a huge raft of stuff happening in the space. But fascinating about the white roofs.
Adam?
Very exciting.
Exactly. We've got here at AUT, we've actually set up a department that looks at the built environment.
Yes.
Such as the level of work that's been done here.
That's John Tukey, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yes.
It is indeed. He's involved with that.
I thought I'd just put a plug in for John. You know.
Well, let's, Alan.
In terms of the,
yeah, keep,
in terms
keep,
of how people, in terms of how people live,
yes.
what we found in this experiment was these buildings had about 10 centimetres of insulation, which is basically the old insulation spec requirement. And no, it didn't really make much difference in the temperature whether inside the building where people lived or were occupying, whether the colour of the roof. The insulation, with that low level of insulation, was significant enough to make it a negligible difference. We're talking half a degree. quite different. But in the up in the roof cavity itself, which of course wasn't protected from the heat, it was significant heat difference. As
right. Now, Alan, do you have a comment?
Goes up inside the roof would know.
No, I was just going to say. No, I was just going to say, like, it's it is interesting, and it reminded me of something when we were kids and we went on holidays to Spain or wherever. My mother wouldn't let us wear dark clothes because she said we'd literally melt. And we didn't understand the science behind it. We just knew the result and went, okay, fair enough. So, yeah, then I went through a rock stage and wanted to wear black and, you know, lost a lot of weight. But it's...
But now he must be in his Batman phase because he's got his Batman T-shirt on.
Adam, just before you go, so this might be in the future. I mean, you know, climate change is trying to assist us. With us, we're trying to look at policies both at a local governance level and a national level. This might be an issue for the future where we get a city-wide mandate to actually have light-coloured roofs.
Yeah, if that sort of thing was to come through, I mean, it would definitely have an effect on the temperature of the built environment. There's no doubt about that at all. But you would end up with situations like what has happened down south. For example, in Los Angeles, they have experimented with painting the roads a light grey. Almost a white, for this very reason, because, you know, it's a massive urban area. Mm. And what they've found is there have been a lot of complaints, very similar to what we had come from down south, where the light was too bright.
Okay. So you've got that aspect.
The issue of reflected light, which is what causes white roofs to work, like everything, there is the law of unintended consequences, and this is one of them.
Mm.
So if you were to do it, you need to think about the orientation of your roof, what's going to happen, and all that sort of
stuff. All right, so it's quite complicated. So if you have a whole suburb of white roofs, the glare might be...
another issue.
Hey, yeah. Dr. Taylor, thank you very much for your time. That was so very interesting. White roofs. What do you think about that issue? As a general rule, white roofs, 2101 is the number to text, or light asphalt, white asphalt, who knows, might it work? It's 14 to 5, the panel, RNZ National. Alan McElroy and Leonie Freeman with me today. There's been a backlash over a new online course launched last week, aimed at helping tenants understand what it takes to look after a house. Issues like how to ventilate a house, rubbish removal, and getting on with your neighbours. A landlord says she has received hate mail after setting up the online training program for renters, labelled A New Circle of Tenancy Hell by a critic or critics. It cost $129 a year, after which you get a certificate valid for 1 year where you can go and presumably show your landlord. The co-creator of the program of choice tenants is Colette Barker, who is with us now. Kia ora, Colette.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you very much. So look, simple advice for tenants. Were you surprised by the backlash?
Well, when we created the course, of course we were going to add simple advice in because it's important advice. But there's also a lot of nitty-gritty in the background that is hard to put in a 20-word ad. So, you know, there's things like different garden care, who's responsible for what, and who's responsible for which insurances, and how to read insurance, and how to create the proper paper trails. There's a lot of technical stuff in there too.
Right, okay, so not just the simple stuff like how to open a window.
No, not just that, although there are a lot of cases of people not really understanding that ventilation, although it lets cold air in, it also lets wet air out. So it's something that you do need to tell people, and
Is that quite an issue, ventilation, Colette? Because we talked about this a few months ago, and it seemed to me this issue came up quite a lot with landlords about ventilation, not opening windows, all that type of thing.
Well, I have heard from landlords and rental agents that's a common thing. I myself have never been a landlord. I'm a tenant. So I'm coming at it from a tenant's point of view.
Okay.
I've been I've been a tenant, you know, as a young tenant leaving home, and then I've bought my own home, and I've seen what it takes to take care of a house, and then I'm back to renting, surprisingly. And the way that I look after a house now, after owning a home, is entirely different.
Right. Okay.
So these are things that are good to learn.
Could some people say it might say, but it's the tone of it. Tenants might say, "Hey, this is patronising. I mean, how to ventilate? Really, come on."
Well, yeah, there's possibly that. You can take it a number of different ways, but if it didn't need to be said, why is it coming up so often, and why is there such a mould problem all the time? Is the mould problem purely because, that all the houses are damp? Surely some of the houses can be fixed with some ventilation.
And what about those who might say, where's the landlord site, the choice landlord site, how to become a better landlord, on tips like how to respond to a leak or how to put in a heat pump?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also in the Choice Tenant course on how to deal with a landlord when you're asking for things and it's not happening. Right. So there's also really good advice on how to deal with landlords who are not coming up with their side of the bargain. And the beauty is, once you've got this Choice Tenant certificate, which doesn't take long to get, then you can take that Choice Tenant certificate out in the weekend and look for new houses. So the ball comes back into the court of the tenant, and the tenant's got the power again.
All right.
So they want to take control of the fan.
Hey, just a bit of some updated news coming right through now. A non-customer-facing employee who works at Westpac corporate head office building in Auckland has contracted COVID-19. From a close contact outside of Westpac. So we'll have more at 5 p.m. on that. To this issue, Leonie Freeman, what do you make of what Colette's saying here?
Yeah, so, look, it's people's choice whether they want to sign up and do the course. But, you know, I used to own a property management company, and we used to provide quite a lot of information for tenants. And for some people who have rented or owned a house, some of it they might know. But, you know, we found things like issues around insurance. So often tenants didn't understand that they needed to take their own contents insurance because they used to think it sat under the landlord until they had something stolen. Or how did the bond system work? Because they, you know, and where did the money sit? What do they do in emergencies? So if there was a flood, what happens? And, you know, making sure that they know how to contact 24-hour, what the 24-hour sort of emergency service is, and what do you do with repairs and maintenance, and what's the obligation? So there is quite a bit in this, and like I said, you know, some people will know this stuff, but some people don't, particularly if they're new to renting. And just on the ventilation thing, a lot of people know, but we used to see, and often, interesting enough, it was people maybe that came from overseas where there were different types of housing where, you know, they had central heating, so they often closed up the house all the time, whereas in New Zealand, you know, we know you've got to get because of the moisture, you've got to get a bit of air out. Right. So there are issues here. I mean, it's people's choice whether they do the course, but there are definitely things that not everybody understands.
All right. Hey, Colette Barker, thank you very much for your time on that. I appreciate it. Oh, by the way, are you still there? Are you still there?
Yeah.
For those of us who do want to, check out the site, what's the website?
It is www.choicetenant.co.nz.
Choicetenant.co.nz. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Alan, would you pay $130 a year to get a certificate for that?
No. When you're renting,
it's just another bill.
It's another, if you know, a lot of people can't afford it if you're struggling to pay for groceries and stuff. But when you're renting a place, you often get a welcome pack. I never read it because I'm lazy and I've no attention span. Yeah. But when something goes wrong, if the dishwasher
That's
breaks,
where you go.
I jump in there. Yeah. I'm not going to sit down and study it before moving in, you know, before setting up TV and internet. But no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't pay it.
Okay. Recapping that news again that just came through. A non-customer-facing employee who works at Westpac corporate head office building in Auckland has contracted COVID-19 from a close contact outside of Westpac. So we'll see where that goes. You'll hear more about that at 5pm. Now, earlier in the week, we discussed the idea of having a national food strategy, combining all food issues under one umbrella. The issue of teaching kids about good food as one of the key points that came up actually. And one email reminded us, came through to the panel, of the Guardian to Table program currently offering around 15,000 children food education, which Dr. Ella Henry alluded to. In 2019, over 12,000 primary school students grew, cooked and ate nearly half a million veggie-based meals. With us is Catherine Bell, who is the co-founder and chair of Garden to Table. Kia ora, Catherine.
Kia ora, Wallace.
Yeah, so this came up in the context of, a national food strategy, bringing in all points of focus around food. And this one came up, didn't it, about kids enjoying learning, growing and eating their own food. Tell us a bit about Garden to Table.
Exactly, and I just happened to be in the car listening to that segment on Tuesday afternoon, not at my desk as I normally am, so it was very timely. So I think that a food strategy of any sort should involve children and food education. We know at Garden to Table that there are a lot of people now in the community who simply don't know how to feed themselves with fresh food. So I think this was borne out during the COVID level 4 lockdown where people simply didn't know where to get food because there were no takeaway shops open.
Mm.
And that's a sort of sad indictment of today's world. So Garden to Table has been operating for 10 years and we're now in about 180 schools around the country where this is primary schools, where children aged between 7 and 12 learn on a weekly basis, as part of their learning, how to grow vegetables, fruits and herbs, how to harvest them, how to cook with them, and then they all sit around a table and enjoy the fruits of their labour, the cooking, together. And this is all linked back to their curriculum. So while they're in the garden and the kitchen, they're also learning maths and science and social studies and that sort of thing and improving their literacy. And to us, it's really a no-brainer that every child in New Zealand should have this opportunity. And for that reason, we actually submitted to be part of the free school lunches program that the government is instigating currently. And actually today, the first one was launched at Gate Pass School in the Bay of Plenty.
Oh, how timely.
Having said that, exactly, it's already a Garden to Table school, but the principal there saw the benefit of having the children actually grow and prepare their own lunches. Now, they won't do it every day. The school will be split up and each child will have an opportunity every week to make their own lunch from produce that they have grown. And it's all linked into the Garden to Table program.
Catherine,
so it's really wonderful.
Wonderful to have you on and give us a quick explainer of Garden to Table there. Catherine, thank you very much for that. Do you grow your own veggies out on McElroy?
No, I'm in the process of starting on my balcony of a small
you
space.
Are?
Yeah, because the price of lettuce is too much. And then if I'm going to pay for the tenancy certificate, it's going to cost me a fortune. I think I'm going to get a cow and a couple of chickens as well and take care of my own dietary requirements.
Are you going to put those on the balcony?
On the balcony,
as well?
Yeah, plenty of room. Yeah.
Cow and chickens.
What's the last veggie you grew?
I don't know. Unless the spud went off in the fridge and multiplied, maybe that. But I don't think you should eat that.
Not a potato. Not a
no.
I grew. The last veggie I grew was a cucumber, and I was very proud of it. Very, very proud. There's the real sense of pride when you grow your own.
Yours, you grew it.
What was the last veggie you grew?
Oh, it's been a long time. Probably it'd be a long, long time. Probably more. My mother used to have a big garden, and all the veggies. I've not been.
Why?
Such...
Why is it always back then you had a big garden?
Yeah, well, because I don't know. I've never really been a gardener, so.
All right, and you're back home this afternoon to have a. Have a beer and a
shovel. I'm going to gig. I'm going to run around with the dog and then go to the classic.
Very good.
On the balcony with some cow and bloody dog or something.
And my dog poo.
Ella McElroy, Leonie Freeman, have a great long weekend. And to all our listeners across the country, you too. I'm Wallace Trappin, back Tuesday, 3:45. Till then, bye.